T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Loud and Local with Kevin Deers rolls on 99.9 KISW.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to Isolate with You. It's a new YouTube thing I'm doing at home while I'm have the equipment set up, and it's kind of I'm kind of on break from a few things, from jobs and whatnot. I have the late Kathy Faulkner hanging out. She's got a ton of CDs behind her. She's got a Bob Ross. What is that? What's the Bob Ross thing?
This is Happy Little Accidents, Wit and Wisdom from Bob Ross.
I dig it.
Right above, wait, where is it? Oh, complete with the Bob Ross bobblehead.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It talks, I think, but I think the battery's dead.
He's certainly pretty relaxing at a time like this. I would say a deep dive into some Bob Ross would be nice.
You got to do some serious trees, you know?
Absolutely. If you're from Seattle, you certainly know the name Kathy Faulkner, maybe the late Kathy Faulkner. She's a radio legend here in the Northwest, rock and roll legend. And if you're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yet, you will probably be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the DJ sometime in the near future. How are you holding up, Kathy?
I'm holding up good. You know, one of the benefits of working for myself at home, staying at home's not hard. Getting toilet paper is a little bit more challenging, but, you know, we roll with the punches.
Yeah, you live on an island, so
I do.
How's the island life during all of this pandemic life?
Island life is good so far. I mean, we have a little bit of yard, so we get to go outside and such, and it's a little harder to get supplies, but it's a lot of fun. I've got plenty to do.
Yeah, so what do you mean, like, plenty to do? So what have you been doing to keep your mind busy and keep yourself from going stir crazy and crazy?
Well, I have about 7 trees of alder to split. So I'm splitting firewood for next winter. So look out, man. I'm badass.
That's a good way to get some aggression out too.
Yeah, I got plenty to do.
That's cool. And have you been able to, like, catch up on some reading or some binge watching some movies or anything, or a lot of content out there?
You know, it's a really good question, Kevin. I have a lot of dreams as far as books to read, but I end up scrolling through social media and then poof, the day's gone. I don't know if that happens to you. It's happened to me multiple times. but we're binge watching. We got the month-long free pass to CBS All Access. So we're catching up on Picard, catching up on some old Star Trek episodes to get my teen up to date. And then I think we're going to move on to Disney Plus and do... What's the Star Wars show there? We're going to do that.
Oh, the Mandalorian, yep.
Mandalorian. And then we have a stack of a long list of movies that we're looking at doing either in the old analog form of DVD or hopefully streaming. We've got pretty slow internet here, so we're probably going to go DVD.
Okay, well, I'll send you some suggestions if I have any, if anything comes to mind. But I do have to say, while you have the free months of CBS, I would suggest definitely when you're done with Picard, definitely check out the new Twilight Zone by Jordan Peele. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's right. Okay,
yeah, that's
I'll
really
do that.
Good.
Okay, I got a bump, so I'm going to cram it, yeah.
So you mentioned about kind of going on social media and there's as much as there's negativity, there's a lot of positivity, people come together. But at the same time, we can get stuck in sort of a feedback loop of negativity and whatnot. So I think before we go into this interview and get too deep into it, I'll just start with gratitude. What are three or four things that you're grateful for today?
Well, today I'm grateful for my health, my family, having work, though it's gone down. I'm grateful for having work. And an axe to swing on firewood certainly takes the tensions away. So I'll knock out those four. How's that?
Nice. I like it. Right on. Well, let's go into the rock and roll side of your world and the radio thing. So I'm curious, okay, like, at what age did you purchase your first, like, record, tape, CD? I'm assuming it's either tape or record. And how old were you and what was it?
It was in middle school. I don't remember. I know the band. It was Cars Candy O album, because okay, a friend of mine loaned me the first Cars record, and I dubbed it onto cassette, so I didn't have to buy that one. Cars Candy O was the first album that I purchased.
Nice. Right on. And then is that what made you kind of fall in love, or what made you fall in love with rock and roll and want to go deeper into that wormhole?
You know, there's a name in Seattle that many people know, and that's Steve Slayton. And it was listening to his show around the same time. He introduced us to the Scorpions and to AC/DC, and mm-hmm. And it was AC/DC Dirty Deeds that kind of, I did the deep dive into rock and then hard rock and then into metal. So Slayton is the reason for the deep dive, but I love music. And then I had a real curiosity on how radio worked, you know, specifically KISW, because I listened to it when I was a kid. So that's kind of how that started.
So bring me back to that time and how, you know, important radio was to you. How did you see yourself being that person behind the turntables, behind the cassette player, or whatever, you know, function? I'm sure it was probably turntables at that time. Did you see yourself there? Were you aspirational for that?
You know, it's weird. Hindsight, I could say yeah, but it was more, I mean, you know, the vibe at KISW, it's always, you know, a party looking for a place to happen. And that certainly was the case back in the vinyl days, when I was listening to it, you know, in elementary school and then in middle school. So I just wanted in the door to see what it was all about. Yeah. And then once I got in the door to see what it was all about, then I wanted to be a part of it. And when you have a hunger to be around rock and roll, you kind of don't care mm-hmm. at a certain point about what exact form it was going to take. So no, I didn't have that crystal clear vision. I'm so grateful for the path that it's taken and the people I've been able to work with, but I just want to be part of it.
Yeah. So how did you get your foot in the door? Did you go to college for radio? Did you go do like a high school class? Did you just,
you don't know this story, do you?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
Oh, well, there you go. It was a ninth grade English project.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I had to, in my freshman year in high school, I had to interview somebody in media, and I thought, hey, this is my chance to get in the door. And so I asked Slayton if I could interview him, and then became his intern, and then got on the payroll, and then worked my way up from intern. So that's how I got in the door.
That's awesome. And were you doing overnights, and how did you, like, what was the transition there? So you were his intern.
The first job I had at KISW was answering phones for Steve Slayton.
Nice.
I think it was four nights a week because I didn't have my driver's license yet, and I had to keep my grades up, or my mom wouldn't let me go answer phones.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I got paid in records, I think, the first couple of years I was there. So it was awesome. I mean, imagine being in high school, man, and you get to go and take the records to, you know, to your friend's house before they're released, right? So it was the perfect opportunity to start out.
Oh, that's amazing. And then obviously, you know, from there you get on the air and you become the late Kathy Faulkner. You had such a run there in your initial like KISW run. You were on the forefront of like the Seattle scene and like such an incredible scene in the 80s and 90s. What was that feeling like being I guess it's probably a hard question to ask and really harder to answer, but what was it feel? What was the feel like in feeling like in Seattle and being at such a pivotal place and when in such a pivotal radio station?
I think, well, being at a pivotal radio station, I always took that as an incredible opportunity. I mean, not many people start in a major market in radio, let alone their first job. So I knew the opportunity I had before me. As far as music and the club scene, I mean, by the time we're talking, you know, 1986 to 88 in that window, started getting a lot more involved in the local bands, particularly when working on Metal Shop. And then you start, exactly. And then you started seeing, other bands coming out, the emergence of Sub Pop and the music that they were putting out. So for us, the vibe or what it felt like, we were hanging with our friends. Again, I'm going to go back to that same vibe that KISW has always had. The musicians and the jocks at KISW and the team, we were one, we were friends, and we hung out and supported one another, just like the bands in that day supported one another, because there weren't a lot of venues for them to do original music. So they were teaming up to do the VFW halls and the Hub ballrooms, so, you know, more bands could go on stage together. And so I would say in 87, 88, we knew, oh, I touched my face. In 87, 88, we knew that there was something that was going to absolutely explode.
Yeah.
And then obviously in 1991, with Nirvana hitting number one and Alice in Chains coming out and Pearl Jam releasing 10, everything exploded from there. So there was that 3-year period that we knew that we had something special.
Yeah.
What we, and you want your bands to succeed. You want the rest of the country to understand what we have that's so amazing. But then it gets to a point where everybody wanted a piece of it. So 92 on was stay the way and give our band some breathing room.
Yeah.
So it was this amazing, amazing roller coaster ride, I guess is the only way I can put it.
That's funny. And so like I'm sure like, you know, label reps and everyone kind of comes and saturates the market at that point. And the Seattle people bands probably moving to Seattle to get signed and stuff. It becomes,
well, and I can think of an example. Something that's so obvious was the tribute album Temple of the Dog to honor Andrew Wood and Mother Love Bone.
Yeah.
And when it came out, we played it. The whole community celebrated it, but the Seattle music scene didn't explode until maybe a year later. Okay. So imagine the record labels coming back to Seattle saying, okay, now the nation knows that Seattle exists. Why don't you play Say Hello to Heaven as if it's brand new? We've been playing it when it was, you know, in demo form. So, but on the same token, we wanted to support all the artists as much as possible to succeed in an amazing once in a lifetime genre and scene. Yeah. So hell yeah. I mean, if it means, you know, we deep dove, we ended up playing like way more songs and telling the label that we were playing the single when we were, you know, playing Reach Down or, you know, Call Me the Dog or whatever. But
yeah,
you know, you have to make those kind of negotiations when working with labels in a scene that's kind of taking a life of its own. We were kind of writing the rule book as we went along.
I touched my face too. Sorry.
Oh my God.
We're bad.
From me. I'm your elder.
during those times, like maybe, What are some of your favorite in studio moments, in studio interviews? Oh, touching her face.
I'm thinking in studio moments. Well, you and I have talked about when Sanctuary came in and gave me brownies. So we've talked about that on Metal Shop. That was
special brownies.
Special brownies. So yeah, that was a special time for me on the radio. I don't know. I guess a couple fun times. I remember the first time we had Eddie and the guys from Pearl Jam into the station for an interview just before 10 came out. And it wasn't so much the interview itself, which was great. And mm-hmm. they played acoustic and, you know, all of that was fabulous. But Eddie and I had the opportunity to sit in the next studio and have a little bit of a conversation.
Awesome.
And sitting down with him and saying, do you realize what is about to happen and how your world is like about to change?
Yeah.
And him and I remember his presence. I remember he was so in the moment, and him and I had a really candid conversation about him trying to play the game as a new band mm-hmm. always has to, but yeah. always standing by the points and the scruples or the things that are most important to you as an artist.
That's great.
Or you as a band collectively.
Yeah.
And every time I see the decisions that Pearl Jam makes, whether it's an easy decision or a hard decision, I always think about that conversation, because of all of the bands that I've worked with, they have always done things on their terms, and I have a huge respect for them for that.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. And that's a band that, you know, I gotta say, like, I like Pearl Jam, but I was never like blown away by them until it was those home shows that they played. I think it was last year, or and then I got it. I was like, wow, world's best live rock band. Like, it just it clicked with me, and I was like, okay, I get it, and this is amazing. So that's awesome that you had to have that moment in such an early time, and you know, really see that they are the same people that they are these days.
Yeah, and I remember getting postcards. The station got postcards from the guys when they were on their first club tour in Europe, and how excited we were to get postcards from them.
That's awesome.
They're in countries we haven't been to yet, you know.
Right.
It was cool.
Maybe, do you have any chaotic or embarrassing moments from your time at KISW? Name a couple.
No, they're embarrassing.
Okay. Fair enough. Anything that just went south, but you can still talk about?
Well, I guess my rotary dial phone is ringing downstairs.
Oh my God.
Do you hear it?
I do. That's amazing.
Well, it's a Metallica story.
Cool. I like Metallica stories.
And you recall when Metallica was going up against Napster.
That was a
famous moment in Metallica's history. And everybody wanted a piece of Lars and having interviews because it was the hot story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got the interview with Lars, and I was in a brand new studio. It was when KISW had moved to Olive. Not the studios you guys are in now, but the Olive studio. And I thought I knew the board, but apparently I had this amazing conversation with him that never recorded.
Oh.
And so I had to call his manager, Cliff Bernstein, and say that I fucked up and didn't record the interview. And he, bless his heart, he didn't yell at me and he didn't say anything responsive. It was just this long pause of silence, which was excruciating on my end.
Yep.
But then Lars had to do the interview all over again. Actually, he didn't have to.
He did.
And saved my ass, actually. So I am always, always grateful for that. But it was embarrassing as hell to make that phone call and say, I didn't push the record button.
Oh my God, I've had that happen too. And it's a cringy, like when you have to hit up the tour manager. I mean, mine was never on the level of Metallica. It was like smaller death metal bands and stuff, but still hitting up that manager with the email or the text like, hey, I know I already kind of took some of your time today, but can I take some more time?
Well, and the first interview was so magic, and the second interview was a little kind of stale, and it's hard to go through the material again.
Yeah.
But what was cool, and this is one of those special moments, is a couple days after, because he was in town for the grand opening of EMP, which is now Mopop,
mm-hmm.
and he and Cantrell came by the station to spin records and hang out one night when I was on the air.
Yeah.
But because of all that was going on with Napster and the whole interview thing, Lars couldn't say he was at the station. So he was Jerry's Uncle Bob. So Jerry and Uncle Bob hung out for a while and played tunes with me. And you could tell it was him. Anybody who asked is like, no, Lars wasn't here. Uncle Bob was there, you know. It was a fun moment.
That's awesome, dude. Uncle Bob. Hey, that Uncle Bob sounds familiar.
I like Uncle Bob. Uncle Bob's nice.
So, so obviously, you know, you got to be in touch with a ton of awesome up and coming bands and whatnot. If you could give me, and, you know, you don't have to say, you know, your top five favorite or whatever. What are some of your favorites? What are some of your favorite Northwest bands of all time?
Oh, Kevin, you're going to hate my answer. And this is not trying to be a bitch or anything.
Yeah.
I don't have favorites. I love them all. Every experience I had with, you know, everyone from Gypsy Rose and Rorschach Test to Second Coming to Metal Church to Sanctuary. I mean, all of those moments to Candlebox and Screaming Trees and Mudhoney and the Melvins and Queensryche and all of those add up to an amazing journey. Please don't make me pick.
Okay. I won't make you pick, but you did name.
They're my buds. They're my family. So
you did name some pretty badass ones there. So I'll let you go on that one. All right. Well, then let's talk about what keeps you in the Northwest, because you know, you might not be in Seattle proper right now, like you're on an island, but what keeps you in the Northwest, dude? Why are you still in the Seattle? What do you love about the Northwest and Pacific Northwest?
Well, I'm born and raised, so it's hard to take the Seattle out of me. Okay. I'm a Northwest gal. I've always loved this region. I've never lived for a long stint of time anywhere else. So, but I consider myself well-traveled, and there's places that I would visit, but this is my home. And so I'm always coming back. What I love about the area, call me morose, but I love the weather. I love the rain. I love it. I love the gray. It's home. The gray and I work together really well. I like the people. I like the ingenuity. I like the no bullshit about the Northwest. If we want to do something, we get it done. If we don't want to do it, we kick back. And it's always been a nice balance. You know, certainly Seattle has gone through amazing, insane growth over the years. So sometimes I go into certain areas and I don't necessarily recognize it, as opposed to when I grew up or was here, you know, during my early days at KISW. But Seattle's still in there, and I'm grateful to see it. Very grateful to see it.
Absolutely.
Pardon me, Kevin.
You are Northwest.
It's Northwest is me, yes.
So what, you know, you couldn't choose your favorites Northwest bands, but I will ask you, overall, what are four albums that changed your life for the better?
Zeppelin 2.
Nice.
AC/DC Dirty Deeds.
Classic.
Metallica, Master of Puppets.
Yeah.
And Tool, Opiate.
That's an interesting choice, the Tool, Opiate, because all those three other ones are, you know, considered quote unquote like game changers.
Did I freeze?
So the other three are considered like genre defying game changers, and Tool, Opiate is one for me personally, but that's an interesting one to add onto that collection, because you know, it might not be considered as classic as some of those other ones. What was it about Tool, Opiate? And I believe you were one of the first people to ever play that on the radio. Is that correct?
Yeah. College radio was really big into Tool, and that's where it was starting to bubble under. It was marketed onto the metal circuit. And I do have to disclaimer, the reason that I didn't label any Seattle bands is because we talked about Seattle specifically.
For sure.
But there's Seattle releases that changed my life as well. There was something about Maynard's vocals that was like nothing I had ever heard before. Mm-hmm. The other thing is how Tool performed live and how their albums were put together. They reminded me, in a different genre of music, like Pink Floyd and Rush were to classic rock or to rock, that they could be and would be an anonymous band in the age of digital, which I found really alluring. Their music to me was very contagious and sounded amazing at loud volume. And then that is like, you know, my basis. So I started working with them through the record label. And then when Undertow came out, we thought everybody was going to be going a, like our station was, you know, everybody at the station was so into Tool. And for whatever reason, the country wasn't catching on. So as far as I understand, the label was getting ready to just write it off and say, we're going to try again at the next record. And I'm like, no, this is the record.
Yeah.
You don't put this one aside and wait for the next one. This is the record.
Yeah.
And so I browbeat them pretty hard, and they came up with some more marketing money, and the band went out on the road, and they played at Rockstock that same year.
Cool.
And then kind of the rest is history. Rockstock was, that was a huge one. That was an amazing performance. They gave it their all. It was incredible.
That's awesome. That's cool, man. I like to hear that's Tool, certainly one of my favorite bands, and it's cool to hear like the beginning of that band. And
yeah,
obviously not now, these days they're like an anomaly, you know. It would be, you'd have to be on the level of like Joe Rogan to get an interview with Maynard, it seems like. Did you watch that interview with Joe Rogan with Maynard? He talks a lot about wine.
I did. That's not. Sure. No, I should have put it on my list of things to stream, right?
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of good content out there, and we're producing some right now. So,
yes.
Just the last couple questions. I, you know, do have to ask about this crazy, you know, timeline that we're currently living in. How do you think this is going to change us as a society for the better, if we can look at a positive?
Wow.
Or is there a positive?
There's always a positive. I think we're all grappling with how this is going to end up. So not having a clear vision of the end, it's kind of hard to go, but I'm going to try. So
sure.
I think, and we've been having family discussions. I have a teenager here, and we've been having some serious family discussions about how our lives are going to be forever changed.
Good. Yeah.
For the better, my hope is that the pissing and the moaning, the fighting over things that in the grand scheme don't really contribute to humanity. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that we as a living being, I hope that we can start weighing things a little differently. It's not all about the buck. It's not all about the politics. This is humanity, and this is life, and this is our planet Earth. And I would love for the conversations to go to more big picture views.
That'd be nice. We'll see.
If we succeed in doing that, that I would consider to be a great positive.
I would agree. You know, as we don't have a timeline here, what is one thing when all of this is over, who knows, whatever, I'm not putting a timeline on this, but when things clear up, when we're able to go and live our lives, you know, the new normal, whenever that is, what is something you're looking forward to?
Getting together in person with friends.
Yeah.
And not having, no offense, Zoom, not having to do it through Zoom. having a Zoom break.
I think Zoom is happy about the amount of downloads that they're getting during this time. So
yeah, no kidding. No, I'm looking forward to getting together with my friends. I'm looking forward to, my first hug. You know, we've been doing 14 days here because I go in to get supplies, and we reset the 14-day clock. So even here as a family, we're doing elbows and keeping our distance. So I'm looking forward to hugging some people again.
I like it. Well, I look forward to it too, Kathy. And when that time comes, we can have a big hug, have a handshake.
It.
Yeah, a big hug and a handshake. And we'll have some coffee. Kathy,
just
thank you so much.
Don't scare me, okay? Pumpkin that you do.
So I got to tell you, when Kathy was filling in for Taryn, Taryn was on maternity leave. Kathy was doing nights on KISW, and I would come in to do some work on Metal Shot, Loud and Local, or Jabroni Journal, and I would do my best to scare the living shit out of her. And I believe I had her jump scared at least 5 to 6 times.
You would always scare me.
Well, that's certainly
jump
not
out of my seat. Oh my God.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And
hey, it was my pleasure. Thanks for asking, Kevin. It's good to see your face. I miss you.
Hell yeah. Have a good day, Kathy.
All right. Take it easy. Rock on, folks.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.